the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, we're back again for another installment of the Rice Podcast. Have with me, as always, my co-host, Dr. Jason Bond. And we have Dr. Tom Allen, who is our plant pathologist, and
Bald pathologist,
if you follow him on Twitter. And Dr. Jeff Gore, who is our rice entomologist here at DREC. Thank you guys for coming on this morning. So, guys, we've got a lot of things going on out in the field right now, and mainly the calls that I'm getting are centered around disease prevention in armyworms and rice.
Fortunately for me, after the 1st of July, I don't get as many calls.
Your calls go to me, but they need to be going to them.
And the entomologist and the plant pathologist, they go and do their little thing with their drop claws and their whatever pathologists
use. Hand lenses.
And I just drive by in the truck in the AC and say, yeah, we did that in May.
There's still weeds out there.
I'd like to see somebody using a drop cloth in a flooded rice field. Well, that would be
I was just talking about entomology. I wasn't talking about specifically entomology and rice. You do other things, too.
Well, slightly offended.
This is a rice podcast.
I've never had to pluck leaves off peanut plants either. That doesn't look fun when y'all have 45 people out there in one plot.
It's not. But anyway, the key today is talking about insects and diseases in rice. And we do not use a drop cloth. We prefer a sweep net to sample insects in rice.
So, Jeff, a lot of the calls this week have been focused on armyworms, and I've heard you talk a lot about armyworms, and we had the discussion the other day about threshold levels and how they may be changing with some of the new research you have. So fill us in a little bit on where we're at with armyworms right now.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of calls as well recently about armyworms, and I've heard of a few fields being sprayed. The key is, you mentioned thresholds, and we do have a threshold published in the control guide, which is 5 per 10 sweeps. And bottom line is we don't feel real good about that threshold. We're doing a lot of work here in Mississippi, as well as Gus Lorenz and his crew in Arkansas. They have a graduate student looking at it. So we're hoping to refine that threshold, but I think that 5 per 10 sweeps is going to be somewhat low, at least for most of the season.
Well, Jeff, where did that threshold come from? I mean, obviously there was a lot of work went into setting it at that. What leads you to be unconfident in that number as it stands in 2018?
Well, I have no idea where that threshold came from. We can't find any kind of published research where that work was done. And it just seems funny. When I started working in rice, gosh, it's been 8 or 10 years ago now, it seemed like every threshold that we had for every insect was 5 per 10 sweeps. So that kind of threw up a red flag to me.
So it was probably just an off-the-cuff.
Yeah. I think it was a couple guys sitting around in a room at some point.
What we feel comfortable with, then.
Yeah.
I got you.
But the bottom line is it really and truly – across a whole rice field, fall armyworms don't really do that much damage. And we're not seeing we're not really seeing any yield losses from high levels of defoliation in rice. But what we worry about is what it's doing with the maturity of that rice. So we tend to see armyworms in pockets rather than across a whole field. And the thing we're trying to get at now is when we see those heavy pockets where we get heavy damage, is that delay in that rice, so we're getting uneven heading or uneven grain maturity at the end of the season, and we don't know what impact that's going to have on maturity.
Yeah, I mean, maturity is huge in rice, and we get into that with drift and with some of our herbicide tolerance issues. It really doesn't cause a yield loss, but, you know, it may delay heading 3 or 4 days, which can really compromise your harvest schedule.
Yeah, and your grain quality if you're harvesting and drying it all at the same time. But, Jeff, when we think about armyworms and making an application to control armyworms, what triggers the difference between spraying a field edge or treating an entire field?
Well, I think it's 100% based on scouting. If you can get away with spraying a field edge, then by all means spray a field edge. But we rarely see them, at least this time of year, just on a field edge.
All right. Well, we said we got Tom in the studio with us today.
He's working his phone over there.
He's been silent for a complete 5 minutes.
Which is unsettling.
When has that ever happened?
Yeah.
So probably the biggest thing we have going on right now, other than army worms, is we're about to start making a lot of fungicide applications to either control sheath blight or blast. Tom, why don't you walk us through what you're looking for in a field to diagnose a field for blast? You know, we have several varieties in Mississippi that are on multiple susceptibilities, and most of our conventional varieties are susceptible to both blast and sheath blight.
That's right. And that, you know, in the years that blast has really been a question, and I would say the last 4, 5, maybe 6 years, leaf blast has been a little bit more of a question. Not an easy thing to diagnose, especially when you think about how many herbicides fly around in the air, and that does add to the leaf spot issue that you run across. Normally what I look for, and I realize this will kind of be a lazy statement, I look in areas of the field where the flood may have dropped field edges, places where I know that I can easily find leaves with typical blast symptoms.
Okay, so walk me through a typical blast symptom.
Typical blast symptom, best way to consider that is these are going to look like diamonds. They're very diamond shaped, where they're triangular, kind of four edges to it instead of a round lesion that you would typically get with herbicide drift or herbicide injury or some of the other leaf spots. Now, the hard thing to say is, and this would be more towards the plant pathologist in me, that you'd need a hand lens to look at it, but the hard part is anything that produces a lesion on a rice leaf or any other plant leaf, for that matter, will have something grow within that lesion. So it's not like I can walk you through what that's going to look like as you look through that hand lens, although it will look like, you know, little whiskers, a little bit of fuzz growing in there. It's not necessarily going to be black in coloration. It's not going to be perfectly dark. And typically that would occur towards the oldest part of the lesion, which would be the direct center. And you'll usually get kind of maroon borders with a gray center in any of those blast lesions. And as I said, field edges, you'll walk into areas, maybe in a field where there might be a hot spot, but more often than not, you're not going to run across blast lesions the entire field or across an entire field, but there may be little hot spots that you'll walk up on.
All right, so Tom, you keep mentioning herbicide, and on one of our previous shows when Bobby and I were talking about herbicide and drift, it always comes up that we get a lot of spotting. And sometimes that's surfactant, sometimes it's from the application we made to the field, sometimes it's from off-target movement. But, you know, the symptom you just described for blast is also going to look a lot like the symptom that an off-target paraquat application is going to make on rice the same time of year. So if we're scouting, how can we guard against, you know, the confusion between those two?
I'm pausing because I don't exactly know how to answer that.
I don't think it's a cut and dried issue.
No.
So what I was thinking, another question I wanted to ask you, you know, you talked about field edges, and definitely in our territory, we don't have tree lines, you know, for every field, but there, you know, we do have a lot of fields that might have a tree line down one side, and if we're looking at off target movement, if the source of that herbicide came from the other side of the tree line, then we wouldn't have herbicide symptoms right up close to the tree line. But when I walked fields with you looking for blast, if there was a tree line, that edge seems to be kind of where you gravitate towards.
Absolutely. Any of those places where dew's held on that field for a longer period of time, any shade, temperature differences, that's a great place to look for blast symptomology there. And really, I think the best way to kind of get it across is if you have some questions about what those are, call us, have us come and look at it, collect samples. It's easy to diagnose in the lab, but not everybody runs around with a compound microscope in their truck to pull spores and look at that.
You know? Only you, brother.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's a geeky plant pathologist kind of thing.
Most consultants have a pair of rubber boots and a sweep net.
I've got rubber boots and a shovel.
Well, you've won up on me. I have a broken shovel in the back of my truck. So,
So there are, not every scenario, but back to the point with the tree line, there are scenarios where we can feel confident that what we're looking at is caused by herbicide or caused by disease, and it's just not a one-size-fits-all.
No, that's exactly right, and that's kind of the hard thing to get across, is that I think you have to look at several places in a field and make a determination as to what you're looking at based on what's going around that field area.
So moving on from leaf blast, neck blast, panicle blast, what happens if we miss leaf blast?
I think we've certainly run across a couple of small little instances in a few geographic locations where we have seen some neck blast, but it doesn't seem to progress from the leaf blast phase to neck blast. And about all I could attribute that to is that I think our automatic timing fungicides that we make probably helps prevent some of that. So you're getting a little double whammy there where you're getting some sheath blight benefit. And then depending upon what active ingredients you're putting in there, kind of preventing a little bit of kernel smut or fall smut. I think that's probably an added benefit of that application. But I certainly don't have any hard and fast data to really support that statement.
So, Tom, if you have the leaf blast phase present in your field, are you going to make that normal automatic application, or are you going to base it on scouting and maybe make an application and have to make a second application to keep that leaf blast in that phase and not let it move up to the next? So how do you handle a field that you have a positive ID on the leaf blast phase?
Based on my understanding and everything, the conversations that I've had with people that are much more experienced than I am, they indicate that making a fungicide application to manage leaf blast is probably not going to be economically beneficial. So typically the statement I make is just go on about your normal business. If you're planning on making an automatic fungicide application to prevent sheath blight, then go ahead and make that application, and we'll address any issues at a later date.
Most of the fungicides we would use are effective on both. Is that?
Absolutely.
Okay. I was just clarifying.
The active ingredients that are contained in there would have activity on both of those. But attempting to just address a leaf blast issue is probably not going to be as economically beneficial as just making the automatic fungicide application.
All right. So we're always about efficiency. So assuming we're going to make a fungicide application, and then we're also scouting for armyworms, Jeff, and we have, we decide that our scouting tells us that we need to treat the whole field. Your combinations of fungicides and insecticides, is that an okay strategy?
Well, from a scouting standpoint, that actually makes it easy, because that is an okay strategy. And I usually tell people that if they're going to be making a fungicide application, you can essentially take out that application cost from the insecticide at that point, which would lower your threshold a little bit.
Because you were going across it anyway for the fungicide.
That's correct.
Makes it a whole lot easier to spray for those army worms when you're already putting a trip across the field with the airplane.
Right. And we're talking a lot about army worms, but keep in mind, another thing related to army worms, especially this time of year, is a lot of our rice is about to start heading. And as I said, the army worms don't really scare me that bad in terms of hurting the rice or causing yield loss. And so a lot of times we can kind of wait, and rice stink bugs are going to be hitting us soon. And keep in mind that the rice that heads first in an area is going to tend to have the heaviest rice stink bug pressure. So I wouldn't get too excited about low levels of fall armyworms, knowing in the very near future we're probably going to be spraying stink bugs. So that's another place we can kind of kill two birds with one stone.
And, Jeff, do you think the reason that we do tend to get excited about armyworms is because they're real big and showy?
It is, and you can visually see the damage that they're causing, or the feeding that they're causing, because they're defoliating.
You can visibly see the worms.
Yeah, worms and
the swarm.
And I've gotten a lot of calls really the last 2 years about folks finding more armyworms in the head of rice. And that worries me a little bit more, because they're actually feeding on the grain.
Well, and I was going to ask that. We always talk about with drift, if the flag leaf's not out, depending on what the herbicide is, but if, you know, if you injure the flag leaf, you're probably going to influence yield. So my question earlier to you, and I just neglected to ask it, but growth stage wise, is there, you know, growth stages that are more susceptible to armyworms? And I think you just answered that with the later being more critical.
Well, what we've done so far, it looks like mid-season is the only time that we've shown a yield loss from armyworms from defoliation.
And that would be when our panicle's developing down in the right. down in the sheath.
Once that panicle's emerged, we've gone in and clipped every flag leaf off of the plants in a plot and still didn't have a yield loss from that.
Oh, wow. So that is different than herbicide damage.
Yeah, so I think a lot of that, you know, that and it may be the way that injury's happening or whatever, the plant's able to shift resources to that head, so it may be different, but we haven't seen armyworms feeding on the flag leaf being a big issue.
So we've heard Jeff talk about armyworm feeding, Tom, and I, one of your big things that I always hear you say in meetings is it's a secondary infection. Is blast a primary infection or a secondary infection?
I'd say blast is a primary infection, and that's just based on most of the symptomology I've seen, although I do agree that you probably could end up with some secondary infection, but I've not seen a field, at least in the years where I've been observant of a leaf blast issue and really thought that maybe that was a secondary infection. I mean, there's always that possibility, but I'd lean more towards that being a primary infection.
Tom, so armyworms, leaf blast, combinations of herbicides, got a herbicide on the brain, insecticides and fungicides, how late is too late?
I'd have to look at the specific labels, but I some of those are number of days and some of those are specific growth stages.
And that's the same way herbicides are. You know, we talked about salvage herbicide applications and, you know, Facet is generally the latest one we can use. It's a 40-day pre-harvest interval. Some of the other ones are much earlier.
What, clincher's, what, 60 days?
Am I right on that? Yeah, clincher's 60 days. You know, some of the other ones are like, you know, joint movement. So just ballpark, you know, so like name one of the our primary fungicides, and if you know the cutoff.
So let's something like Stratego.
Yeah.
And I want to say most of those, and I'd have to look to be specific, 35 days, probably a lot of those. And a lot of that's going to be based on what the active ingredients are. Typically, if it contains a triazole, you know, those are the ones that have the earlier cutoff on pre-harvest intervals.
So that would get us in the neighborhood of draining, Bobby?
Generally, if we're making those applications now, you got to think, you know, we want to make that application right as before that boot starts splitting, that way that kernel is protected coming through, right? So I think that generally is going to give us in that 30-day range before we're going to get the combine in the field at least. And with harvest weather, could be longer.
Right, yeah. I mean, but that would be ballpark, give or take a week.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's probably going to be very similar for insecticides in terms of that pre-harvest interval. Once the field's drained, at that point, generally the crop's safe from insects. So we don't tend to worry, or I shouldn't say don't worry. We don't often get asked the question about pre-harvest intervals with insecticides.
It makes me feel better. I was right. 35 days pre-harvest interval on a lot of the fungicide
products.
Well,
you guys be confident in your knowledge.
Yeah, and you're not confident behind that microphone, son.
Well, it's the seat and everything else. So
the seat's uncomfortable.
It is.
If we maintain this.
I told you we'll get big comfy couches. So, guys, we're bringing this podcast to you today from our new studio, where unfortunately we only have one couch and I'm sitting on it. Jason's over there in a hard chair and he's kind of upset at me right now.
What? No, I'm not touching that.
Tom's standing in the corner.
I'm not touching that.
Why are you not touching that?
This couch is really cushy too.
Yeah, Jeff got a spot on the couch.
So there's obviously two people on the couch and three people on the couch. Three's crowd.
All right, guys. Well, we're getting a little long-winded and we appreciate y'all listening this week. And like always, if you have a question, have a problem, give any of us a call and we'll get to you as quick as we can.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.